Hey, are you at that point where you don't even know what to believe anymore that's on the internet? Well, you're not alone, and I've got some interesting information for you. A talk that I have on defending truth in the age of cyber deception. Stick around, this is going to be a good one. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy, and today I want to talk to you about, well, and what is truth? For those of us who are biblical scholars, we might recognize that particular quote. If not, Google it, look it up. But the thought here is that there's a whole lot out there that is not true, and it's hard to figure out what's going on. So it turns out that this concept of fake news or things like that is nothing new. It's been around for centuries, if you will, millennia. Even Thucydides in the history of the Peloponnesian War talked about people inventing stories that aren't true and they'll never are going to be true. And yet people continue to do that today. Now, this isn't a new topic for me. I've had the privilege to go ahead and present over the last 4 years about Russian cyber warfare and the activities that are taking place over there. And I thought it'd be done after 1 year or 2 years, but it keeps progressing. And so therefore, the requirement to keep talking continues. And so here I am again to talk a little bit more on 2026 about what's going on with regard to that. So it may not be the final episode, and if so, I might follow through on this. Here's an interesting concept. There is something called information manipulation theory, and it was coined by a professor at Michigan State, and it's Dr. Stephen McCormick, and he says this, that you can get misleading messages, and you can create that with multiple dimensions of conversational maxims that come from Paul Grice. The quantity of information. You could limit the quantity, like a white lie, you just don't say something, or excess, where you have so much excess information that you can't really sort out what's actually going on. The quality of it, whether you provide true information or outright false information, or misleading, where you're not filling in all the details and you let somebody come to the wrong conclusion. The concept of relation or the relevance to the particular topic at hand. A lot of time the distractions are like, oop, squirrel. And all of a sudden you hope that the audience gets misled or focuses on something else. And then the concept of clarity. We've heard about concepts like word salad and other things like that, the vague, ambiguous way of speaking. Well, this can be a very deliberate approach in addition to maybe just a personal style to go ahead and obscure the truth. What's really interesting that I found out when I looked into this information manipulation theory, that the author himself says what? He says, more importantly, it's not actually a theory at all. You don't have any testable propositions. You can't have a hypothesis that you could falsify. So technically, it fails to meet the established criteria for a viable social scientific theory. Nonetheless, it's an excellent working framework. As they say, all models are wrong, but some are useful. So we'll try to make this useful. Now, if we go back in time, let's say around World War II, we realize that to do deception operations required some pretty complex schemes. There's a story about the man who never was, Major Martin, who is actually a person who was supposed to deceive the Germans by having a dead body wash up on the shore in Spain, carrying a briefcase that had top secret documents in it. Well, of course, the first problem is how do you get a dead body? And it turned out that they found an alcoholic in London area. It turns out that apparently acute methanol poisoning is similar to drowning in terms of what it does to a human body, at least in terms of a simple autopsy. He washed ashore with this briefcase. The area that he was in was not German controlled, but the Germans heard about it. They desperately wanted it. Eventually, he got the content. And because of the nature of doing so, they were deceived about the Allied invasion of Sicily. They thought it was going to be someplace else. There's also the Ghost Army that created things such as the artificial tanks, where they said, hey, everything is done reconnaissance. Maybe somebody is taking photographs from the air. So giant inflatable tanks that don't weigh tons. They weigh enough that three or four men could pick them up and carry them around and move them around. But you don't let the reconnaissance aircraft take pictures of you doing that. And that whole thing back there, the Ghost Army, was only declassified in 1996. They kept that secret for a long, long time. And then Operation Fortitude to convince the German High Command that D-Day would be at the closest point between England and France, not at Normandy. And as it turned out, it was so convincing that the Germans held back a number of divisions in reserve, convinced in the first couple of days that Normandy was just a fake to move and things like that. But these very complex schemes were involving a lot of physical material, people, money, moving things around. And of course, they relied upon being able to have a limited amount of observation. As I remember, there's an old Donald Sutherland movie where he plays some German spy that is able to determine that this is all a fake and he's trying to get back to Germany. He ends up on some island in a lighthouse on it. I forget the rest of it, but it's interesting that that has even worked its way into Hollywood. Well, there's some people who talk about the oldest profession, and I would suggest that if we go back and look at Genesis chapter 3, verse 4 and 5, you'll find a real oldest profession, which is deception. When the serpent said to the woman, "For God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil." Well, deception's been going on for a long time, and today we find out that deception is a formal practice of departments of state. So we look, for example, at some of the quotes that we hear from, like, Sergei Lavrov from the Russian Federation. And those in the West would read things where they say, he says, Russia's never deliberately targeted any sites not linked to military abilities of Ukraine. And yet we hear on the news constantly about apartment buildings, schools, hospitals, other infrastructure being destroyed or damaged. Well, he's not necessarily being evil like a serpent. He's just government employees following orders. And in fact, Russia has been the master of deception, false information, for decades. It goes back so far that the average person in Russia knows that when the government tells them something, that, yeah, you've got to be really careful about believing it. And so the naivete is gone, and yet speaking up about it and saying something in that society might be rather dangerous because the government has a lot of control over what information gets out, which we're going to talk a little bit about in a few minutes, about how do you actually control that flow of information. But meanwhile, let's take a look at some of these mechanisms. So the state has media, they have propaganda, they have Pravda, which was the truth in Russian, where there was the newspaper that would put out, and you'd look for that, and you will have official truths. This is the position of the government. And we hear in the news today about newsworthy events, something happens, there is an account of that, and immediately in Washington, D.C., for the Americans, we hear some official government account of what happened. Later, we find out that might be nothing at all that was accurate from the evidence that was presented. Nonetheless, governments continue to do this. There's also censorship out there. And if you do not follow that, this is particularly more important back during things such as wartime, when media was censored to avoid the problem of giving the enemy, a combatant, information about friendly troops that could result in harm or damage to them. Mass surveillance, where you're always looking at things, when you can go ahead and absorb all this information, catch narratives, and either spin false narratives or quash false narratives, depending upon what you want to do. And, of course, be able to run counter narratives, manipulate the facts and things such as that. And so all these are capabilities that governments can do. Well, there's a number of different techniques that they can do in doing such a things, and one of them is called amplification. What you do is you have an initial message, and someone might hear it or they might not. But between bots and troll farms and coordinated campaigns, you can really up the volume and get a lot more people to hear that message and hopefully believe it. So there is an organization called the Russian Internet Research Agency, the IRA, operated from 2013 to 2018 by none other than Yevgeny Prigozhin, and had almost 1,000 people working for him, 24/7 at one point. Well, the statement that I found looking at the research here, and this is from University of Melbourne, there are two key benefits to acting as a private entity. A, the plausible deniability for the Russian government in relation to its support and involvement, and B, creative license for the business. So that means that if you're not the government, then you can't be accused of being an arm. Well, you'd be accused of anything, but you can't be, if you will, proven to be an arm of the government. And because you're not a government employee, you might be able to try things that you might not do otherwise. The other quote that came from that particular document I researched was, the IRA's overarching objective was to sow discord and division in nations that were not aligned with Russia's geopolitics, and to undermine confidence in democratic institutions such as electoral systems. The modus operandi was predominantly to amplify existing divisions within societies. Sound familiar? And if you take a look at that, and you look at some of the things we've had here in the United States in past elections, and then in the news cycle and things, we realize that that division in trying to cause a country who does not align with Russia's geopolitics to have these internal fractures and fissures is considered to be advantageous to that particular government. If you take a look at the Republic of Iran and the fissures that are taking place in terms of the government and the military and the people and the former Shah's son and things such as that, if you are an opponent of that particular regime, you might be happy with or might even encourage that separation that we take place. So again, this is not just something that is done merely by the Russians. I just say them as an example because, well, they probably do it better than anybody else. So with amplification, there's ways you can do that. As I said, the bots, the troll farms and things like that, fake or semi-fake accounts, these sock puppet accounts that are not really any person there. But you find out in some cases, and I talked to some people, his job was an internet troll for the United States. And he said what he would do is he would have his 8-hour shift and his information that he would put out was designed to convince people. But he'd look at other accounts and he would see these, at the time, Facebook accounts and the like that were, hey, this person's personality, their grammar, their approach changed every 8 hours because there were people working shift work and they just take over that particular identity. And so what happens then is that there would be a story that would come out saying X did something to Y, and they would flood it with comments and more things to either make a story look really appealing or make it less credible by saying, oh, that's not true. We saw this. I was happened to be there. I saw this. And again, there's no requirement for any of the stuff to be true. And so as a result, there's organizations, for example, the EU versus Disinfo is a website that you can look up. And it's a flagship project of the European Union. And they identify, analyze, and raise awareness of disinformation in different forms. And so you can look at some of their websites and see that the EU VSDisinfo.eu. It's kind of a fun website. You can poke around with that. Another approach is distortion, the deepfakes, synthetic media, maybe forged documents. Early on after the invasion of Ukraine, there was a very amateurish, we would say, deepfake of President Zelensky calling soldiers to lay down their weapons as uploaded to a hacked Ukrainian news site, but it looked like something out of the old Monty Python, where just the mouth that moved, nothing else moved. It was very static. It was kind of obvious for somebody who was watching that, yeah, this really doesn't look like a proper news conference from a human. Well, that was only 4 years ago. And today, our capabilities, if you take a look with producing video, audio on demand, is incredibly better, orders of magnitude better, where it's nearly impossible on a first glance to realize whether something is true or not. So here, speed to market creates an advantage for the disinformer, because if you can get this something fake out there first, you put the arbiters of truth on their back heels. They have to now go respond to that. They are in a responsive mode rather than leading the news. And then it also undermines people's trust on what is real. And so after a while, one of two things happen. Either they're going to believe things that aren't real because the deepfakes are so good, or they won't believe anything, including the truth, at which point, even either way, you've pretty much accomplished your information. Another disinformation technique out there is distortion by, as I said, these deepfakes, the forged documents, etc. But they're effective. And now what we look at is there are other ways to do that. There's another site out there, the Disinformation and Foreign Interference. There's a paper that you could get on a challenge for the EU and its member states. It was published in June of 2024, and it's available out there at the OEGFE.AT, Austria, and things such as that. So what we find then is that there's a lot of concern that nation states are recognizing that their geopolitical opponents are using these techniques. It's not kinetic warfare. It's not bombs and missiles and drones. It's trying to go after the minds of the people. And it turns out that if you go back and you read the writings from Clausewitz from the early 1800s, and he was required reading at the war colleges, he talks about the Trinity. And if you want to go ahead and defeat another country, well, you can either defeat their government, you can defeat their military, but the third is the will of the people. And if we take a look at the 1960s and 1970s, for those of us who are old enough to remember them, and the anti-war movement and the protests against Vietnam, there's no way that the North Vietnamese military was going to be able to create a defeat on the battlefield for all of the United States. They would have little wins here and there, but they could not overall defeat. There is no way that the North Vietnamese government could replace the regime change in Washington, D.C., although kind of in 1969 after Nixon won an election and Johnson chose not to run again. There was a bit of a regime change, but they didn't really change the whole government per se. We still had that continuity of government, but they did change the will of the people. And it was interesting because you look at Eastern philosophy for warfighting, and it comes from Sun Tzu, Art of War. And on Western side, we use Clausewitz, Vom Kriege, on war. And it was interesting that the North Vietnamese used the Western doctrine against the Westerners, and it worked. Another disinformation technique is suppression, censorship, social penalties, and things like that. You can criminalize information distribution if you say, hey, you said something and we didn't want you to say that, so we are going to fine you, we're going to arrest you, we're going to detain you because you're putting out information we don't want. There are ways to block information. China has a great internet firewall, for example, and special protocols to get around that, prevent VPNs from operating, because that's the way people often get around these controls. So if you can figure out what all the VPN exit nodes are, you can block those from an IP stack. As well as interesting things. So we've seen in China, like in the Rongcheng, social credit scores, where what happens is that in this particular community, everybody is given a credit amount. It starts you not with money, but with a social credit. You start at 1,000. Now, when you do something that's good, it's credit worthy. You do something to propagate information that the government approves of, you gain points. If you do things that allow you to help the environment, perhaps, but mostly helping out the government in charge, the current regime, if you speak up positively of that, you gain additional social credit. Ultimately, you may become the model of creditworthiness, at which point you get access to all kinds of things. Well, on the other side, if you're disruptive, if you put out things, if you disagree with the government, if maybe you do things that they don't like, you ended up kind of being put on its own sort of a human denialist. You don't get your titles. Maybe they'll be taken away. You cannot apply, or at least will not be selected at all for any government jobs. Your professional qualifications might be canceled, saying you no longer have your certs and things like that. You cannot get a loan. And it keeps getting worse, you might end up with disciplinary action and things like that. Well, this is a bit of a concern because in some cases, some people are considering it a template for a much larger than a single community, but it could be at the national level. And it doesn't necessarily have to be China who implements it. So think about that. So with these mechanisms, with the way to go ahead and do that, to restrict counter narratives, if there's a truth that comes out that the government likes and there's somebody pushing fake news, you can criminalize that. You're not worried about this First Amendment rights and things like that. If you don't like a server, shut it down. If you have a journalist, pull them off the street. If there's a whistleblower who goes ahead and speaks out against the government, maybe they disappear a little bit. And so what happens is that the individuals who would attempt to put out the truth to the population are either taken out of circulation or their ability to communicate is interfered with or denied, at which point there's an information void. And now alternative narratives can go in there. And so we find then, for example, like the QUIC protocol, the QUIC protocol, which is designed to send Chinese residents from the outside world, so to speak. And there's been efforts to go ahead and find ways to circumvent it and get around it and things such as that. But the whole idea is that if you can control information flow, and probably the only nation that does it almost utterly would be the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, aka North Korea, and DPRK is extremely effective in that. But think of the requirement to have that level of control over information flow requires an absolutely rigid state where the individual has few, if any, rights. That works, but it may not be the future that you want to live in. Another disinformation technique, a hybrid technique, is coordinating with state and non-state actors. So what will happen then is you will have a government issue a statement, and then private citizens, or apparently private citizens, will say, hey, that's right. Oh, yeah, I was there. I heard this person speak. This is wonderful. I believe in it. And so what happens then is you end up amplifying the state narratives, but they use these proxies, influencers, other things like that. See, what's happening is now the information is not just top-down. It's not just the government saying something, but you're hearing it coming from laterally, from peers, from other people that are out there and things such as that. And so it creates some plausible deniability for the states who are using these non-state actors. And it also allows different audiences to be reached. Some people might not watch or listen to the official government channels, but they're almost always going to listen to their neighbors. They're going to get together, whether it's at the coffee shop or the barber shop or wherever information is exchanged. And this information works back and forth. And we found some particular disinformation networks out there using paid influencers, fake accounts, all kinds of accounts all over different channels. They're designed to go ahead and align this message. So when the government puts out something, particularly a false message, and there's a huge amplification of that across a number of different actors, it's interesting because a lot of people tend to, well, believe it. So what do you have to do to suppress the truth? Anytime that you find something that is being suppressed, there is a requirement. There's a motive. There's always a motive. Otherwise, why bother? But it may not be initially obvious. And so how do you look for it? Well, one thing could be political gain. You say, hey, there's an agenda. We want to advance that. Or we have some dissent we want to go ahead and suppress or something like that. In any case, it tends to be political from the government perspective. How do we advance a candidate? How do we advance an agenda? How do we keep somebody from advancing and things such as that? We'll see that even in modern campaigns where fake information comes out and people are falsely accused of things, putting them on the defensive and causing the electorate to go, I'm not so sure about this person, even though none of that stuff was true. There's, of course, financial profit. We've seen that with the crypto pump and dump and looked at crypto coins and things like that over the last 16 years or so. There's been so much of that pump and dump, which is all the financial profit about creating and suppressing truth or coming up with fake narratives. Personal interests, political candidates want to win. Once you get up there and you get that political thing, you can do pretty well. Some people like the power. Some people like the money you can make on the sideshows. So you get some really good stock tips when you're going ahead and holding hearings to approve companies, things such as that. So it works out well. Or some people might just be trying to avoid punishment. And so they're working at that, again, a personal benefit or an ideological thing, trying to push one particular platform, whether it's a government, whether it's a religion, whether it's a company or things like that, to say, this is what we want people to believe. And you control that with things like censorship, where you deliberately restrict or remove information, secrecy, where you say, oh, that's now classified, or we're going to remove your security clearance so you no longer have access to that. And now we decouple the truth from the access. And then intimidation, the threats of legal action, lawsuits and things like that. You're under arrest or you're being hit with lawsuit after lawsuit or threats or harassment and things like that. See, the propaganda allows a spin on it where then you can add all the flooding of information to create the disinformation narrative tsunami where that's all that's out there. Sure, there's the truth, but it's going to be harder and harder to find. If you have cooperation at the media, you get selective reporting where some details will be reported, others will be conveniently ignored. And also the idea is by manipulating the narrative, you can create doubt about facts. You could cause people to, well, wonder, is that really true and the whole thing true at all? What's the best thing to your advantage if you're trying to suppress truth? People who lack critical thinking skills. Parents, if there's anything you can do to prepare your kids for success in life, is to help them develop solid, strong, critical thinking skills. I've never seen a class at the university or high school level that says critical thinking 101, but it needs to be there because you need to be able to look at stuff and go, it just doesn't look right, or it might look right, but I'm going to do additional research and information. Hey, in cybersecurity, we do that. I'm looking for an old driver. I was trying to find an old piece of software. I think it was something like a TrueCrypt. In the last TrueCrypt version 7.1 alpha, it came out years ago. And then when they ended up providing things such as BitLocker, they dropped the project. Well, it got forked over to a different parallel universe from TrueCrypt, and you get ViaCrypt. But then you look online, you could find version 7.1 alpha, version 7.1 Bravo, version 7.2, version 8. And most of them are fake. So when you find the 7.1 alpha and you find them on different sites, which is the real one? And maybe you say, well, I'm going to download 5 copies of it. Go ahead and look at the hash and the SHA-256 on it and compare them and find the one that has the highest. So I did that. I found 5 different locations for the match. One of them was off. It's like, yeah, that's probably statistically the Trojan one. So I went with the majority and it turned out that was the right pick. Also, by charging huge fees for research data, by putting up a toll booth, you restrict people being able to get things. And we've seen cases of the internet has been shut down wholesale in countries. In 2024, India had their internet shut down 84 different times in different places. And the last thing is the echo chambers that people run into. They end up seeing the same narrative over and over again. It's what they want to believe in, and so they get more and more convinced that that's the right thing to do. How do we amplify this? Control the authoritative data. Do not let people get access to the real stuff, but set up alternative narratives and then have huge consequences for anybody who's trying to put out the truth. Navalny found that out in Russia, where he ended up dying in a Russian prison after much maltreatment because he was attempting to go ahead and put out a narrative that was counter to what the Russian government wanted to have. And we've seen this also where certain governments will align. They will say, hey, I'm going to put out a message. I want you to put out the same message. You put out the same message. And so now it's not just country X saying something, but it's country X and Y and Z. And then other people say, well, they're all agreeing on the same thing. It must be true. Because this repetition that you see there, the repeating, also the bots and the trolls, create some sort of believability. So what can you do? Here's an interesting question I have for you. In your organization, who is the arbiter of truth? Who decides what's true? Is it the CEO? Is it legal? Is it you, the CISO? Is it Loudmouth Charlie who goes ahead and gets everybody to listen to him? That's an interesting question to ask. Who decides what's true? And then says, "This is okay, we accept this is truth," particularly when there's a lot of counter narratives out there. There's deep fake detection tools that are out there. You can look at stuff and say, yeah, that's not right. And it used to be, you look for a person with 6 fingers. I remember at DEF CON a couple of years ago, someone had little plastic fingers that they had 3D printed. Like a ring. He said, if you're going to go rob a bank, put this finger on your hand so that when they have the video, you can say, well, look, there's 6 fingers on the hand. It's obviously a AI generated. It's not, wasn't me. Please dismiss the case. Well, of course, they're much better at this deep fake and stuff like that. But the clues that we find in altered narratives, looking at the metadata in pictures or movies or things like that, or finding that people have overly precise claims but no way to go ahead and get to that level of detail and things like that, or suddenly there's a penalty for a counter-narrative if you go out against what the official line is, and then all of a sudden the government's saying, well, you're going to be in trouble if you say something about it. Maybe there's something fishy about the first one. So here's another idea. How about this? Run some I/O tabletop drills and have pre-approved statements you need to generate. Instead of saying you have ransomware or you have a server that goes down or is a major snowstorm, how about some opponent has put out a huge amount of fake information saying your company is doing horrible things to puppies or things like that, or your software doesn't work or it produces ransomware. And then you got to deal with that false narrative. I bet you've never done that before. That's a different coordination that you'd have to do, mostly with marketing and PR and communications and legal. Try that sometime. Be able to have pipelines for open source intelligence so you can rapidly validate things so you can read something but go check multiple sources for it. Before you go ahead and speak officially or formally about something, have a truth release checklist where you agree that this is the content that we have to have and these are the people who have to look at it. And then create some key performance indicators. What is your time to verify? What is the half-life of a rumor? How well can we correct this particular misinformation, and can we do so? Because bottom line is, deception is not going to go away, ever. It's going to get better. It's getting harder to spot. And we really need, at the national level, our BS detector to work really well. At corporate level, we need it to work well. As an individual, you need it to work well, and also for your family. But as you say, the best defense is critical thinking, due diligence. So expect sort of an arms race over time between the deepfakes and detectors. And if you're able to go ahead and implement some of these ideas, then I think you'll be able to do a little bit better in this age of disinformation. So I hope you found this useful. Thank you very much for being a listener or a watcher of CISO Tradecraft. If you found it valuable to you, go ahead and let other people know where you get your information. Come to our website at CISOTradecraft.com. If you're not following us, follow us on LinkedIn or subscribe on YouTube or any one of a number of podcast channels that we're at, and let other people know where you get your information. We hope that you found this valuable, and thank you for spending the time with me. I'm your host, G. Mark Hardy, and until next time, stay safe out there.